If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. I hope you all enjoyed the new introduction to my channel. I think it's pretty spooky myself. Anyways, sit back and relax, toast up those beautiful buns of yours, and let's get spooky. I've always loved the woods. There's nothing quite like it, being in nature, the green and brown of foliage, the skipping rivers and streams, the bird calls and wind in the trees. A beautiful world alive with animals and plants, majesty around every corner from the smallest sprout to the tallest mountainous peaks. The whole forest is one community in a way. Tree roots like hands holding each other beneath the soil, sharing memories unspoken. I'm sorry. I got a little carried away. I'm rather passionate about nature. Since I was a kid at church camp and I went camping for the very first time, I found myself a total outdoors nut. And earlier last year, I finally got my dream job. A park ranger position at the biggest national park in Ontario, Pekaskwa National Park, working at the northernmost HQ. When the virus hit, it was hard for all of us. The park ended up closing to visitors. Luckily, I kept my job. I ended up staying in the HQ for the first portion of the lockdown with a few colleagues. Normally, national parks close to visitors for the winters, which obviously makes sense. It's the most dangerous time of the year for hikers and campers. Quarantine kept us closed the entire year, so it wasn't anything new. Pekaskwa is no different in terms of its closing policy, but it was different in the sense that some of us rangers ended up having to stay at the HQ over the winter. There was no fear of fire, obviously. We were shaped up for the frigid and snowy winter. But as I was confused about the reason, my coworkers didn't raise a fuss. They knew exactly what we were in for. I asked Chris what was going on, and he looked at me with an expression like, "You don't know?" "Don't sweat it, Max. It's nothing to worry about. In the past, we've had people jump the fence to get in during the off-season. So upper management just wants us to keep an eye out to make sure nobody gets in and gets themselves hurt," he assured me. I felt comforted by the sentiment, figuring it'd be a piece of cake. The only issue is that, I know this seems contradictory to my previous statement about nature, but I felt an uneasiness about the whole situation. Laugh at me all you want, but I've always had a sort of paranoia about winter. It's by far the most dangerous time to be outside, especially in a place like the forest. In the spring, you fear the rain, being drenched and catching a chill. In the summer and early autumn, you fear wildfires. And in all three seasons, you fear the animals. But in winter, the cold alone is enough to kill you, being caught in a blizzard or even just spending the night with no shelter. The thick layer of snow hides everything. One wrong step could send you falling into a frozen lake or a tree well. The animals are less of a fear. The bears are asleep in their caves and the wolves won't even get close. But that only makes the place even more frightening to me. In the winter, the forest doesn't feel like a forest. The trees have shed their leaves, and the animals are hidden away. It's deadly quiet out there. Everything is muffled. The loneliness itches at you when you're out that far. The days feel like open mouths. It's only as the sun dips below the horizon that you truly see the teeth around you. I remember being young and asking my pastor why God would even make winter if it was so difficult for anyone to survive in it. I didn't get a straight answer from him. But I digress. You understand what I'm getting at by now. Suffice it to say, I had my anxieties about spending the winter so close to the woods. I recall every morning waking up in my room, and although the presence of five other people in the HQ with me brought me comfort, feeling uneasy. I would get dressed in the morning, enjoy a meal cooked by Priya around a table with my friends, lace up my boots and zip up my coat, and then it would be time for work. I felt childish for it, but I would deviate from my path of patrol frequently to seek out my fellow rangers, sometimes to approach them and talk, but other times just to see them through the trees, knowing they were out there brought me peace. December was drawing to a close. It was Christmas Day at the HQ. We didn't all celebrate Christmas. Quinn is Jewish, Priya is Muslim, and Christopher and Bree are both atheists, but we still decided to do a gift exchange. It wasn't anything too fancy, just some trim kits to make the place feel more at home. We have grown close to each other over the quarantine. It only felt right. Being inside that day, sitting around the wood-burning stove and giving each other gifts felt right. We were in the midst of dinner when things went weird. The thud at the door caused me to jump. It was so out of nowhere that the first few moments we didn't even move, just looking around at each other in confusion. It was Thomas who got up to check. We heard him swear from the door. That got us to move. On the front step there was a stag's head. The bloody stump was dry, but its fur was stained with rusty brown, eyes milky white and vacant. We'd all seen dead animals before, but we knew there was something wrong. I looked around at the others, but they all had annoying looks on their faces, annoyed ones. Chris was the first to speak. "It's probably a prank. Someone might be out in the woods," he said. The others nodded. "We should pair up and sweep the front entrance areas. They can't have gotten far." Everyone began getting dressed to go outside. I looked over my shoulder longingly at our abandoned Christmas dinner, but I didn't complain, not wanting to seem selfish. Someone could be hurt out there. Even if they had pranked us so cruelly like this, I didn't want to think I might indirectly be the cause of someone's death via frostbite. I got the walk with Quinn, luckily. He's been here longer than most of us, second only to Christopher, about 6 years under his belt. We were walking down the trails rather than in the brush, the white beam of the headlight making the fresh snow glimmer as we potted through the thick layer of powder. We made small talk, quimping about the dinner, the presents we had gotten from the co-workers and our family members in the mail and the deer head. It got quiet for a moment, only the sound of the snow under our feet and the wind whistling through the pines. And then Quinn turned to me. "Hey, Max," he asked. "Did anyone tell you about the year walk?" I shook my head, giving him a confused look and slowing my pace. He signed quietly and slowed down with me, muttering in annoyance that no one had told me yet. "Yeah, I thought so. You seemed confused when the boss let us know we'd be staying here over the winter." "What is it?" I asked. He pursed his lips, trying to think of a way to explain it. "It's an old Swedish tradition that happens around this time of year. People spend New Year's night walking through the forest until sunrise. Apparently, they think if they do it, they'll be given a prophecy about the coming year from the goat spirit or whatever. I cocked my head, slowing to a stop. Okay, what's so important about it? From what I hear, it's come back into style in some circles, he chuckled dryly. Last year, some people jumped the fence into the reserve the Duwei Year Walk. They were half frozen to death by the time we had found them. Luckily, they survived, but, you know, they... He trails off, as if he has more he wanted to say, but he shakes his head. Upper management doesn't want the risk of happening again, so they told us to stick around over the winter. We'll all get a bonus for it, though, so that's a plus, huh? He patted me on the back hard, and I mustered up a weak laugh, even though that feeling of unease just continued to grow. The whole tradition reads as something demonic, something my parents would have clasped their hands over my ears to keep me from hearing. It's intriguing. But I didn't let my thoughts of it linger with me as Quinn changed the subject. We didn't end up finding anything, neither did anyone else except for Thomas and Bree. They found the deer's body in the snow, slumped against a tree stump and frozen, with footprints all around the clearing and leading off into the woods. That night, I could hardly sleep. It wasn't about the deer, it wasn't about the year walk, and it wasn't about those footprints. It was about what I knew I would have to do. Patrolling the woods at night, in the dead of winter. I don't know why it was frightening to me that much. It shouldn't have been a big deal. It would be just like any other night patrolling I had taken, only in the middle of winter. The idea of it made me feel queasy. I don't know if it's a true phobia. I know it's irrational. It's just a regular occurrence, a normal portion of the year, and yet I couldn't will myself to sleep. It was in the wee hours of the morning. I still couldn't get any rest. Even though I couldn't sleep, I just laid there in bed, staring up at the ceiling and tracing the wood grains with my eyes. I was shocked out of my trance by the sound of crunching snow and ringing bells outside. I sat up in bed, shuffling to the edge of the bed and looking out the window. Nobody there. The wind continued to whistle in the trees, and the forest was silent. Slowly getting to my feet, I wandered over to the window and peering around. The crunching sound was quieter then, petering off to my right. When I looked down, there were footprints in the snow under my window. I threw open the window and stuck my head out, looking out to where the crunches were headed. And there was nothing there. That didn't exactly help my predicament, only highlighted my fear and added a dark, unknown void to my paranoid, anxious thoughts. In the morning, I woke up and put on my clothes. I ate cereal for breakfast and chatted with Bree and Quinn before we all put on our snow gear and got ready for our first patrol of the day. By the time we went outside, there had been snowfall, washing away all evidence of the footprints outside my window. I try to keep my mind off of it. We walk on our own during the day. It's bright enough we could find each other pretty easily. And we have walkie-talkies if anything goes wrong. I felt like I was being watched that day, but I couldn't place what I was being watched by. The day passed without incident, and so did the day after that, and the one after. Just 3 days until New Year's, and my anxiety continued to mount up. I asked Christopher if I could stay in and file our incident reports. He let me spend one day inside, thank God, but when they were out in the woods doing patrols, I could hear the crunch of snow and ringing of bells again circling around HQ. It happened again the day after when I was lagging behind to wash the dishes after everyone had left. It happened each night too, walking around and around. I was sure I was just hallucinating or my mind was playing tricks on me, but despite myself I couldn't shake that feeling of dread. I prayed for the first time in years that night, clasping my hands together and quaking in my bed. Praying I catch a cold or break a leg, anything for the excuse not to patrol that night. On the morning of December 31st, I woke up an hour ahead of schedule. I crawled out of bed and wandered to the bathroom in my pajamas, splashing water on my face. My head hurt so badly, my knees buckled under me, and I wrapped my arms around the edges of the toilet. I tried not to look at my vomit. Eyes squeezed shut and stomach lurching as I lost all night's dinner in the bowl of the toilet. My anxiety had reached its peak. Even breathing turned into grasping, wheezing hyperventilation, hysteric sobs escaping my choked throat. I pressed my hand over my mouth, digging my fingers in to keep anyone from hearing. The bathroom felt more like a confession booth, claustrophobic and closing in on me, judging from the other side of the door, even though I knew nobody else was awake. I put on my clothes. I had no appetite for breakfast, and when everyone woke up, I acted as though nothing was wrong. I kept my chipper attitude. I picked at my lunch. I filed more incident reports. And nighttime finally came. The snow was thick and cold. I could see all the stars in the sky. The patrol began according to plan. I was paired up with Bree. We talked, but I wasn't much for conversation. I was too busy letting my fear get the best of me, my eyes darting around and my hands shaking under my mittens. I couldn't bring myself to look at Bree, fearing that she would notice the fear in my expression. After a while, the conversation petered off, and we were walking in silence, sweeping our flashlights around through the trees. After a long while of silence, I cleared my throat and looked to Bree. Bree wasn't there. I spun around in a circle. Bree wasn't there. Bree wasn't there. She had just been there, just a few feet behind me, but I looked around again. Everything looked different. I'd walked this patrol path dozens of times, over and over, but nothing looked right. The trees were all wrong, stretching up high into the night sky. There was no sound, just the crunch of footsteps and the whistle of the wind. I could feel my heart rate picking up. I could feel my breath begin to quiver and rattle in my throat, and then my flashlight fizzled out. And as I started to shake, I fumbled my walkie-talkie off my hip and tuned in to the right frequency. "This is Maxwell, asking for backup. Is anybody there?" I stammered into the receiver, voice crackling pathetically. All I got in response was a gargled static sound, no matter what I did. I repeated my message over and over until my voice had dissolved into babbling whimpers and I fell to my knees in the snow. There was no response, just a super lad of fear and loneliness that hit me like an oncoming train. I curled into a ball, hyperventilating and crying into my knees as cold crept in around me. My jacket kept me safe, but still, I could feel the cold on my face. I don't know how long I stayed there, paralyzed with fear and unable to move an inch, just praying to a god that I knew couldn't hear me to let it all be a terrible nightmare. I heard sound then, ahead of me, the crunching of snow. I looked up. In the path ahead, I could see a figure walking away from me. I was up on my feet and running after it in an instant. I called out, my voice still hoarse and raw from crying, yelling for them to stop and wait. They just kept walking. Even with their slow pace, I just couldn't seem to catch up. My hope made me reckless. I didn't notice the route in front of me, and I stumbled forwards, falling face down into the snow. When I looked up, the figure was gone. I shakingly got to my knees in the snow and stared forwards if looking long enough would make it come back. I could hear ringing behind me, but I couldn't bring myself to turn around and look. The two of them walked past me, two women wearing traditional-looking Scandinavian dresses and white veils. In one hand, they each carried a swaddled blanket drenched red in blood, and in the other, a bell ringing with each step. They left a bloody red trail in their wake, droplets of blood in the snow from their children. They spoke blankly, without a tone, speaking in a language I couldn't understand.
Ara tell good for Detta Barn. Ara tell good for Vera Barns. Val signals vi tar medem till honom och alterman hans gava hor varsignad. RV for Vart Vigrad.
I felt sick. I felt my hands grow sweaty and my throat closed up. I followed them. I got to my feet and trudged after them, unable to cry anymore. There was a river ahead, rushing across the path and splitting it in two. I kept walking. The two women walked to the river edge and let their children frail to the ground, blankets falling open full of nothing but bones and mulch. I started hearing other people walking in the woods, taking their own paths, all converging on one point. I didn't run towards them, no matter how much I wanted to. I couldn't bring myself to change course. It was a trance. I know that now, but I didn't understand then. In the middle of the clearing, there was a monument. It wasn't supposed to be there. Nothing was supposed to be in the woods. There should have been nothing there at all, but it was. A pillar of wood with a stag head on the top, a spike through its skull to keep it in place. At its base was the body the head had once belonged to, split open to expose its innards. Steam still rose off of it. It was fresh, still warm. There were others in the clearing, all standing on the ends of their own paths, staring up at the monument with adoration. The deer's head mouth gapped open, tongue hanging out and eyes rolled to show whites. It began to speak without its lips moving.
Kam framat mina barn, din good has valasant as med kapan, as sin ofadisan, var glad for detta bran sam handhar, get dig aren hillig profetia, glad dig ochat.
It groaned out in joyous suffering, its blood dribbling down the pillar in beads. I didn't understand, but the others there did. They scrambled forwards through the snow, dropping to the ground in front of the body of the deer and pulling fistfuls of gore and bloody guts out of the animal's body with wet tearing sounds. I felt sick. I felt terrified. I felt so hungry. I sank to my knees in front of the body and reached forwards. The parts were indistinguishable from each other, mashed together and disgusting. Tears streaming down my cheeks as I shoved pieces of raw deer flesh into my mouth, metallic and chewy and textured in the way that made me want to vomit, but I just kept eating. Why was this happening to me? What was I doing there? I sobbed into my bloody handfuls of venison, leaning down and beginning to tear it with my teeth, licking the blood off of my lips. If there was a god to hear my screams for help, it was cruel enough to turn away. Shame and guilt and fear roiled around in my stomach, and the moon shone down on me like a spotlight at its highest point. The world shrank around me until nothing but the body of the deer and the monument were real. I leaned back, blood drenching my face and hands in front, staring up at the deer head as it stared back at me.
Duvar anoranda, duvar entakek at komatit. Men duar versained durfar engava.
I didn't understand. I couldn't understand. I kept eating, even as I cried. Lightheadedness set in. I staggered to my feet and stumbled away from the clearing, weeping openly and staring at my bloody hands. What have I done? What's happening to me? I am a monster. I couldn't run. Just stumbled away as much as I could, tears and mucus mingling with the blood that had coated my face. I fell to the ground and sobbed into the snow. I covered my ears when I heard people screaming from the clearing behind me and curled into a ball and hide when they ran past me into their forms, hoofs leaving bloody marks in the snow. I splayed out where I laid, and even the silence that fell over the forest was deafening, ringing in my ears. I could hear it now. I could hear everything I couldn't before. I could feel the cold force pumping and beating as one, screaming as one truly living, breathing being despite the snow cover. A being that would consume my body to support it, just as I had the body of the deer. Oh God. There couldn't be a God. This breathing, anamorphous being was a God, a frantic and hungry God. A spiteful and ancient god. It was everything, and I was a part of it. Oh God. Oh God. I must have passed out. When I woke up, I was laying on the trail I had been on with Bree, and Priya was shaking me awake. She looked terrified, and I didn't understand why at first until I noticed the blood all over me. It was real then. Priya helped me to my feet, and I leaned against her heavily on our way back to HQ. They asked me what had happened, and I told them I couldn't remember anything. They were so worried for me, but they didn't seem surprised at the outcome. I think I was just like those people from the year before when they found me. I'm getting a few weeks off. I can't return home. Ontario is on lockdown again. I spent most of my time in HQ, and the others tried to console me. It makes me happy to know they care, but nothing feels right anymore. I can't walk in the cold woods anymore. I could hear the trees moaning hungrily when nobody else can, and I am one of the lucky ones. When I look out the window to the tree line, I could see the deer with human eyes pacing and drooling red, jealous that I was spared when they weren't, even when I never wanted this gift. And when I sleep, I could feel the forest itself breathing, more alive than it's ever been.